One, two, three. Good. All right. So, good morning. It's a pleasure and honor to be here. In fact, it's great. It's a pleasant surprise to be at to be invited to this conference. Ephraim knows what I mean. So, the talk, and in appreciation of the invitation, I'd like to give a sort of a brand, at least partially a brand new talk, and introduce new research program that our group has started to pursue. I'd like to begin with something actually that's about a year old, quantum engineering of optical states, of quantum engineering of single modes of light, and then I'll show you that it can be, the experiment that was done was up to 2 photons, but then I'll show you that this can be extended to arbitrary photon number, and then the new stuff is extension to atomic collectors. So I want to show you how to prepare arbitrary quantum states of an atomic collective, and then how to measure them. So the experiment will be about measuring them. So I'd like to start with something really, really old, namely this experiment that we did back in Konstanz in 2001, measurement, homodyne tomography of the single photon flux state. That's how the experiment worked. So we did parametric down conversion and prepared a single photon by detecting a photon in one channel and did homodyne tomography of the heralded photon in the other channel. And that's what we got. So this is the raw quadrature data. And then if you build a histogram of the quadrature data, it looks like this. And then you can use it to reconstruct a negative Wigner function, which is kind of nice. You get a negative Wigner function if your efficiency, that is your single photon fraction, is above 50%. So the best result we ever got was about 62%, as you can see here. And then you get significant negativities. With atoms, we haven't got that far. We are not negative yet. We hope to become one at one day. So this is 10 years ago. This is 1 year ago. Now this got extended. So quantum technology at the 2-photon level, that is preparation of arbitrary quantum states of light of this kind. And well, as we know, the holy grail is to really be able to prepare any arbitrary quantum state of any system. That's sort of a holy grail of the whole quantum technology. And as we know, the Fock states form a basis in the Hilbert space of optical states. That means that what we really want is to be able to prepare any arbitrary superposition of Fock states. Yeah? So far, people have been able to only conquer different islands in the Hilbert space, but not the entire Hilbert space. And what we did in this experiment is sort of try to do this, but only up to the first two photon states. And here's how we do it. We also do parametric down conversion, but in the idler channel of down conversion, instead of just detecting a photon, we mix the channel with two weak coherent states on beam splitters, like this, right? And then we wait for both these detectors to click, right? And if they click, they could click for two reasons. They could click because of these photons from the down conversion, or they could click because of the photons from coherent states. And furthermore, then you have equal number of photons in the idler and signal channel, and therefore in the signal channel you get also an either 0 or 1 or 2 photons. And furthermore, if you do it right, if you match your modes of the idler with the modes of these coherent state inputs, then these detectors will not be able to tell whether the photon is coming from the coherent state or down conversion, and as a result, you don't just get statistical mixture of 0, 1, and 2 photons in the signal channel, but you get a coherent superposition, and that's what we are showing. So, let me just first show you some examples how it works. So this is an equation. So here, alpha and beta are the amplitudes of coherent states, and gamma is the amplitude of the down conversion, and you see that everything is of the second order in these parameters. So these parameters have to be about the same order of magnitude. And, well, for example, if you set your alpha equal to 0, then the only way you can get a click in this detector is if the photon comes from down conversion. So one must have at least one photon coming from down conversion, and that means that we have no zero photon component here. On the other hand, if we set this photon number, this coherent state to zero, this thing is not working really well. If we set this photon, this coherent state to zero, then the photon here must come from this beam splitter, and the photon here must come from this beam splitter, and then you get some sort of reverse von Gaumandel effect, meaning that you must have either two photons here or zero photons here, but you cannot have one photon here, and as a result, you have no one photon component in the signal channel. Everything is pulsed, so gating is automatic. And a couple of interesting things for quantum information scientists. The state preparation is entirely remote, right? You don't do anything to the signal channel, right? You achieve everything. You achieve this complex superposition entirely thanks to entanglement. And furthermore, the entanglement is very weak, right? Because the down conversion is relatively weak, and the entanglement is very weak, and yet turns out that it does not read the weakness of entanglement does not affect our capability to engineer quantum optical states. It only affects the state production rate. A couple of experimental issues. First, about the down conversion amplitude. As I said, the amplitude of produced states is on the second order of the down conversion amplitude. So you don't want your down conversion amplitude to be either too big or too small. Right, because if it's too big, then you get higher photon components, and then your state fidelity increases. If it's too small, then your state production rate becomes too low. So the optimal is on the scale of 0.1. That means that you generate for every laser, which we have laser pulses at a frequency of about 80 megahertz, and that means that we have one pair events every 100 times less, every 800 kilohertz, and two photon events every 8 kilo, like something like that. In actuality, it's on the scale of, it's much less. It's about 20 hertz, but it's still reasonable. You can still acquire a few tens of thousands of events to do full homodyne tomography. The second experimental issue is the phase reference. So you have to stabilize your two coherent state inputs. They have to be phase stable in order for the state to be phase stable. So it's kind of a technical issue. And then finally, your detection is inefficient. You get some equivalence of losses. And in the state reconstruction that I'm going to show you, we correct for these losses. So we assume that the detection efficiency is 50. We'll verify that the detection efficiency is about 55%. And then in the state reconstruction that I'm going to show you, we correct for this inefficiency. So first, these are experimental results for the first two, for the basis state, the vacuum state. And here you can see the density matrix and the Wigner function. And the single photon state, right? The Wigner function has the dip. And the two photon state, the Wigner function has a dip and a hump. And then you can show different superpositions. So for example, here you do transitions from zero to one. You see the hump moves and you get the dip on the side, and the dip gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually you get there. And you get here. Now this is for one and two. Here you start with a dip and you get the hump on the side, and the hump gets bigger, 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 and you get there. Now you transition from zero to two. You start with this, and you get two dips on the side, so you get squeezing now, and then transition occurs like this. And you also can do superpositions of all three. What we did here is a transition from vacuum to an about equal superposition of one and two, so it looks like this, right? So you end up with an equal superposition of one and two. And finally, in this experiment, we show that we can only not control not only amplitudes, but also phases of these amplitudes. So here we have two states with Wigner functions that are mirror symmetries of each other, and the density matrices are complex conjugates of each other. Right. Now, the next question, so that concludes that experiment. And now the next question is, can we generalize this to an arbitrary number of photons? I mean, you've seen the equation. You've seen that, based on our alpha, beta, and gamma, we can generate a certain up to two photon state. But the question is, can we do the reverse? Can we, suppose we want to generate an arbitrary superposition, B00 plus B11 plus B22. Can we solve the equation and find the experimental parameters that would allow us to generate any arbitrary state? And can we do it not just for two photons, but can we do it for an arbitrary number of photons? And the answer is yes, and that's what I want to show you now. I begin with the description of this elementary operation, which I call partial photon subtraction. It works like this. You send your quantum state through a very weak beam splitter, right? And then through the other channel of the beam splitter, you send a weak coherent state, and then you condition on the click here. Now, the click here can occur for two reasons. Either the photon comes from the coherent state, or it is subtracted from the from the state psi. As a result, the state at the output is like a superposition of the state with subtracted photon and the state with non-subtracted photon. So basically, think of it as a black box that does this operation, right? Superposition of identity operator and photon subtraction operator. And now what we do is we take our down converter and into the idler channel, we put a number of these black or blue boxes, right? Yeah. So we put a number of blue boxes and then the operation on the idler channel, and then finally we condition on the detecting vacuum. So the operation on the idler channel can be written like this, and these factors can be decomposed into a polynomial as is written here. And then if you look at the conditionally prepared state in the signal channel, then what you have is, well, basically what you have is a similar polynomial here in the signal channel. It's easy to see just by looking at the equations, right? And obviously, it is possible to reverse this. So you start with this polynomial, right? And then you can factor it. You can always write it in this form due to the fundamental theorem of algebra. So for every polynomial here, there exists a set of blue boxes that would generate the desired quantum state. And furthermore, if your down conversion amplitude is sufficiently small, then this null detection is not even required. You can just discard this output here, and you'll still get the desired state. So this is basically the idea. I don't know if we're going to do an experiment to this effect, but in principle it's doable. But before I proceed to atoms, I just want to show you that it's also doable quantum state engineering, single mode quantum state, harmonic oscillator quantum state engineering is also possible with other systems, and here how it was done in 2009 with superconducting cavities. Now, let me show you how to generalize it to atomic ensembles. And you probably have guessed already, those who haven't read the abstract. Do you know? Has anybody guessed how to generalize it to atomic ensembles? Any ideas? How to do the same with atomic ensembles? Just one word, DLCZ. Here, so what's DLCZ? DLCZ is when you have an atomic ensemble and the lambda type transition, right? So what happens is you excite the level where the atoms are sitting with a pulse, right? And then you may get a photon emitted, scattered into the Raman scattered onto the other ground level, right? And if you look at the Hamiltonian of this transition, it looks like this, right? There are two factors here. A photon creation operator on this transition, and the operator that creates a single excitation on this transition. Yeah. And what is a collective excitation? Single collective excitation is that when we move one atom from B to C, but we don't know which atom it is. Yeah. So basically, if you look at this Hamiltonian, it's exactly the same as parametric down conversion, but in down conversion you create two photons. Here you create a photon and a quantum of collective excitation. Yeah. And therefore, what you can do is, again, you can apply a bunch of blue boxes here and generate an arbitrary quantum state of the atomic system. Okay, but suppose you've generated now. Now the next question is, how can you measure it? How can you verify that you generated the desired state? The answer is, use the second stage of the DLCZ protocol, which is the read stage. And the read stage is when you apply the read pulse here, when you apply another classical pulse, this time closer to resonance. And this basically works in the same way as readout from the EIT quantum memory. That is, the whatever ground state superposition you had here is now converted into the optical form, right? You have this optical state here, and you can apply homodyne tomography to this optical state, and in this way you found out what the atomic excitation was. And that's basically the program, right? That's what we want to do. And the first step is actually to demonstrate this thing, demonstrate that we can do homodyne tomography on photons from atoms. And here's this experiment. So, well, that's what our system looks like. So basically our standard thing, rubidium vapor cell, it's about 1 centimeter long, no buffer gas, because Raman transitions turn out to not like buffer gas. But the atomic system is somewhat different. First of all, DLCZ is a pulsed protocol. Here we do everything continuously. Second, we use the same field for the two classical fields, right? In the DLCZ, there are separate classical read field and write field. Here we use the same field called bump field, right? So the atoms are, say, sitting here, so we first excite it, then we get the photon here, and then excite it again, but the same, so in practice is exactly the same field. This level gets excited, and you get the photon here, right? And you get correlated photons emitted in the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen state. Now, the reason why we use this system is, first, it's easier. Second, it was shown, there are precursor experiments by Paul Lett that I'll tell you about later. These experiments have shown high efficiency and low noise. And actually, this is something that is a problem with the DLC, with the existing implementations of the DLCZ protocol. They all have relatively poor efficiency, and sometimes they have high noise. And here, with this protocol, we can eliminate, or at least partially eliminate, both. So, before I actually show you the experiment, I want to show how the system has been characterized. The first thing we will do is just a classical experiment. We apply a classical field on the idler, or what we call probe transition, right? And then we observe what happens to the idler, and we also see, one thing that we see is that the conjugate, or the signal, field is generated on the conjugate transition, right? So this is the effect of classical four-way mixing. This is a nonlinear chi-3 optical effect, and it's basically equivalent to the difference frequency generation that many of us use to align our parametric down conversion, right? We do difference frequency to make sure to know where the signal and idler photons go. Here we do the same, but in the four-way mixing configuration, right? And what you see here, what the spectrum that you see here is the transmission of the probe at a stable pump. So the pump is sitting somewhere between the two hyperfine transitions. So as you scan the probe, what you see is two absorption peaks that correspond to these two transitions. But in addition to that, you also see two Raman amplification peaks that correspond to exact two photon resonances between the pump and the exact two photon resonances with the pump, right? Then the signal, then the probe gets amplified, and in addition, then the probe generates the conjugate signal. In order to see this amplification, you have to use very strong pump fields, half a watt. You have to focus it into the cell, and then you get the phase matching angle that's greatly exaggerated here. In actuality, it's only a few milliradians because the refractive index of the atoms is not very high. So that's experiment number one to characterize. Experiment number two to characterize the system is to verify that we get correlated photons here. Now, a straightforward way to do it would be to put two single photon detectors and just count photons. What we did is not exactly the same. What we did is we sent in, again, a classical field, and then it turns out that the classical field serves sort of like a local oscillator for photons emitted at nearby frequencies here and here, and then you can use not single photon detectors, but classical detectors, just regular pin detectors, to observe this light. And then what you see, then you send the signal to a spectrum analyzer, and then what you see is if you subtract the two electronic signals, then the current is below the Schott noise level, right? Below the level that you would observe with two coherent fields of the same intensity. Whereas when you just look at this signal separately and this signal separately, then you would see an elevated noise level. And finally, experiment characterization experiment number three is squeezing. Here we expect to generate a two-mode squeeze state, and we verify it by setting two homodyne detectors here and looking at the correlations of the homodyne photocurrents, and dependent on the phases of the local oscillators, you see about 3 decibels of squeezing. 3 decibels of squeezing show that our efficiency is at least 50%, right? So this is very nice. That means that in principle, we might be able to one day see a negative signal function. Actually, these guys, so this is not new. This was done by the Paul Letts group, and these guys have observed up to 5 decibels. And then finally, the main experiment. So it's the same experiment as I showed you on the first slide, right? But the same but different. So we put a single photon detector now here into the idler channel, and provided that this guy clicks, we perform homodyne detection in the signal channel. The experiment is challenging for several reasons. First of all, compared to the down conversion, in down conversion the pump is blue and the signal idler is red. Here everything is red. And there, they are about only 3 gigahertz apart, and you need to somehow filter 16 orders of magnitude. Second, in order to do homodyne detection, you need to know the temporal mode of the photon. There was a lot said about this at this conference, and I'll say a bit more. And you don't know what the mode is. Finally, and that's sort of a big problem, you have decoherence, right? If you have decoherence, then, of course, the correlation between the photons is damaged. So what you want, to avoid decoherence, you want everything to occur fast, right? You want the atoms to go here and go back, and you cannot use buffer gas because it ruins the Raman process. But in order to make the process faster, you want to hit it with a lot of pump. But if you use too much pump, then you get multi-photon events. So you have to compromise. And now I'd like to talk about how we address the first two challenges, because the third one is sort of just playing around with experiments. So filtering the pump. First, there is spatial separation. 5 milliradians is not much for focused beam, but it's something, so you can get some 6 orders of magnitude. Polarization, pump is one polarization, signal idler is the opposite, the orthogonal polarization, so you can get 4 orders. And finally, you have only 3 gigahertz, so you cannot use a bichromatic mirror, but you can still filter the frequency, and we kind of use an original way. The standard way is to use a filter cavity, but we built this filter cavity in an unusual way. Namely, we rather than using 2 mirrors, which is shaky, right, and which you have to lock, and then if you deal with single photons, you have to somehow eliminate the locking field. What we do is we use a monolithic cavity. So we bought a lens, and we had it anti-reflection coated, high reflection coated on both sides, right? And then it works like a cavity, and you can just temperature tune it, right? So it's temperature like here from 40 to 60 degrees. It's very reasonable, and works very nicely, as you can see here. And you get your six orders of magnitude. Right. The second challenge is the temporal mode. So there was a lot said already that, what we studied at college is that photons are emitted in plane wave modes, which sort of prompted Willis Lamm at some point to write an article, Anti-Photon, where he said that there is no such thing as a photon. But in actuality, of course, you can also talk about the mode that's a superposition of plane wave modes, and that's what we have to do here. Right, and like with forgiveness of theoreticians, we can also write it like this. That this temporal mode is a superposition of different photons emitted at particular moments in time, right? And the point is that if you want to do homodyne tomography of this mode, if you want to measure the quantum state of this mode, then what you do is you take your homodyne photocurrent and you have to integrate it with the same function psi of t. So you have to know what the mode is. You have to know psi of t. And that's a problem. Like, in fact, in existing scenarios, this problem can be solved quite easily. If it's a pulsed experiment, then the mode is just determined by the shape of the pulse, more or less. If it's an OPO cavity experiment, then you can deduce this psi of t from the spectrum of the cavity. Right? You know the spectrum of the cavity, so you can deduce psi of t again. This is doable. In our case, we have a complex atomic system, whose temporal mode is not really known. So we have to use some tricks. And here, there was the last talk yesterday was kind of relevant here. We actually do something similar. Namely, we look at our homodyne photocurrent with respect to the photon detection event, and we then plot the point-wise variance of the photocurrent as a function of time. Now, at each particular pixel, right, each particular time detection event is basically detection of the photon in a very short temporal mode defined by defined by the sampling rate of the oscilloscope, right, a quarter nanosecond. So the detection efficiency is very, very tiny, but you still get some increase in the variance, because the variance of the quadrature variance of the photon is much higher than the quadrature variance of the vacuum. And from that, you can determine the square. So this point-wise variance gives you the square of the mode function. And actually, this is not the limit. You can extract even more information if you look at the autocorrelation function, right? At this type of function, if you average it, then you can get the function. So in particular, if this thing is round, then you know that the mode is pure. If this is elliptical, then the mode is not pure. You can extract a lot of information from this, but I don't want to go into details. Instead, I want to show you the experiment. So here's I just want to show a comparison of the old experiment and the new experiment. And what you see here, what are the main differences? Here you first double and then down convert. You have to do it in order to get local oscillator of the same frequency as sigma. Here, you down convert immediately, and you use a separate laser, which is phase locked to the main laser, to generate a local oscillator. Instead of chi2 nonlinearity in this experiment, you have chi3 nonlinearity in this experiment. Instead of pulsed, you have continuous. Otherwise, the experiments are largely similar. And here you can see the results. So that's where we got so far. We hope to get better. But basically, this is the raw data. And as you can see, there is still a bit more points at the periphery than in the center. So there is a slight dip in the marginal distribution, and corresponds to a large dip in the Wigner function. So we get about 40% of the single photon, right? And we hope to improve this. So we believe that in addition to those losses that we have in the old experiment, we also have this decoherence issue, right? Which further degrades our efficiency. So as an outlook, what do we want to do next? First, we really want to, I'm not sure if we'll ever get there, but we do want to achieve negative Wigner functions, right? And I think the idea to still put a tiny amount of buffer gas to get rid of decoherence and also maybe polymer coating on cell windows, on cell walls. Also demonstrate some kind of quantum state engineering that I described in the beginning, so add coherent states in the detection circuit and show more complex states than just a single excitation. Then one thing that sort of is swept under the rug is the time delay. Right now, there is no real time delay between the two photons, so effectively we are not really measuring the state of the atoms. We're measuring the state generated by the atoms, but not the state of the atoms. And it would be good to implement real DLCZ scheme so that we really can state that we've measured the state of the atoms. And to that end, we'll probably have to transfer to a magneto-optical strap at some point. And the final point is that if we think of it not as a technique to engineer atomic states, but just as a source of photons, it's quite a useful source, because compared to down conversion, which is broadband, here we have a source that narrow band and requires no cavity and no filtering. It's right there, and it's of high efficiency, and it's in a well-defined spatial-temporal mode. To summarize. So first, let's demonstrate, we've shown you a quantum optical state engineering up to the two-photon level, right? So we do some complex measurement in the Idler channel of parametric down conversion, and then the effect of remote state preparation gets you an arbitrary quantum state in the signal channel. And then I've shown you a theory that this can be extended to m photons, and furthermore, this can be extended to engineering of atomic states by means of the Duan-Luk Interact Solar Protocol, right? So you can prepare arbitrary atomic states and then measure them by means of homodyne tomography. And the first, and this would be nice, this whole thing would be nice to implement, and so far we've implemented only the first step, namely homodyne tomography of single photons from an atomic source. Thank you for listening.